The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Marcus Stoinis hits 147 all out against the Sixers overnight in a top of the table Big Bash clash, thus completely redeeming any sins from the week before. England level the series 1-1 in South Africa, all thanks to Joss Butler's sledging. So we discuss how good it feels to support a team who has some aggression about them in the field. We're talking Australia's weird team in India, Shane Warne's baggy green. Josh Philippe is on the show to talk us through Stoinis' record-breaking innings. Michael Vaughan is on the show in another landmark episode. And hashtag AskTGC is topped off with a shower story from Lords. This is all thanks, of course, to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggler.com. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Dave Edwards to my left and Sam Perry to my right. Lads, first up, in light of Stoinis' 147 overnight, I want to know what's the highest score or high score someone scored against you or the most demoralising innings that you've seen scored against you?
Thanks, Higos. I can't actually pinpoint a specific innings because I've erased this stuff from my memory, Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind style. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember.
Did you do that formally? Like get it erased?
There's a clinic you can go to.
Oh, great.
It's in Surry Hills. Okay. And it's bulk billed. I don't remember being on the receiving end of any kind of major, like a double. I don't even remember a double tum, but I just remember just being demoralised in the mid-2000s at North Sydney second grade. There was just a lot of fucking lying on the ground, looking up at the sky shit when, you know, balls went over the fence or onto the highway sometimes. It got me thinking, like, imagine if we grew up in India and we're on the receiving end, one of those blokes that hit 1,000 runs.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you'd need some serious counselling after that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I believe they provide that as well in India.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Okay.
At the Joel Wilson Institute. Same place.
Played in a game where Phil Jakes scored 321 against our side. And I don't want to say too much about it because it's essentially half our corporate material. So if you do want to hire us for the end of season presentation, you can hear the rest of that story.
We need to create a Patreon.
Yeah.
So these kind of stories.
Yeah. You know, we need to monetize all of our failures.
Yeah.
And traumas out of cricket, which already have been doing for years. But he was part of a Sutherland side that hit 6 for 550 against North Sydney at North Sydney Oval, and he scored 321 runs.
How'd you go next week? Did you get him?
We lost outright. Actually, we staved off outright by one wicket.
Oh, right. But, good game.
Yeah.
But you lost outright. Like, you just overall, emotionally, you lost outright.
Yeah. Phil Jakes is a very successful coach for New South Wales at the moment. Sledged me vociferously and hilariously. Again, if you'd like to hire us and find out more, please do. But I'll never forget 321.
That's pretty good. I've told this story before, I reckon. But it was my last season, I think, that I played a couple of years ago, and I dropped a guy on naught badly at second slip. And then he went on to score the fastest 100 I've ever seen. And he was just like, I mean, you talk about clean hitting.
Yeah.
Josh Philippe on the show later.
Yeah, later.
And just like hit some of the cleanest, like funny sixes, like they were towering. Like the height of them matched the trajectory.
Yeah.
And
it was still going up when it hit a tree or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's never quite right though, is it? It was still going up. No, it wasn't going up.
Yeah. It can't happen.
Yeah. Literally used the same ball to bowl the next ball. So it did come down eventually. Anyway, there was that, but like we had written the first book at the time. This is 2016. So one of the guys in the team had like bought the book, in my team had like bought the book and like wanted me to sign it. But I was sitting outside the opposition dressing room, Sydney Uni's dressing room, the door was open. I just dropped a catch. I got a pair in that game as well. Got a pair, dropped the guy in naught, got 100. And then this guy from my team got me to sign the first book. And
from your own team?
From my own team, yeah. But the dressing room door was open from Sydney Uni. They were just looking at me just going, well, I've had a really good day. But, you know.
I was really hoping that the fact that you got that, you were signing a book, had nothing to do with the story and you just wanted to mention that as a kind of compensation. I dropped the guy who went on to score 100, but I did sign books that day. So, what have you done?
And you did play against Sydney Uni, so there were some tremendous networking opportunities for you post-match.
Ed Cowan's on the show later.
We'll start the show by we're talking about, bushfires just ever present in the mind at the moment. And maybe for those listeners overseas might not understand. Well, I'm sure you've seen the press coverage. It's bad. bad in Australia, but like Shane Warne and Ricky Ponty have got together and done some good things. They're going to have a Legends match.
Yeah. I think it's good. I mean, and also like all Dan Bredig kind of pointed out, like all profits from the actual BBL final, which will take place later that day, are going to bushfire relief. If the Stars make the final, which it looks like they will, that'll be at the MCG. And that would, you'd think it'd go close to selling out. Like they did a bushfire tsunami fundraiser in 05 and 70,000 went and they made 14, they raised 14.1 million. And then you're looking at like what? Ponting, Warne, Langer, Gilchrist, Lee, Watson. I've got it here, Michael Clark, Steve Warren, Mel Jones involved in a non-playing capacity. And I'm just thinking like...
Steve Warren just be sledging.
Yeah, exactly.
Gully, chewing gum.
It was the last 4 years of his career.
Fielding?
Just disrespectful. Couldn't think of a better time with this game on before the BBL final to have, because we talk about safety a lot, to have a massive fucking bender the night before, massive, and lie prone on your couch with a blanket, comfort food, Gatorade, whatever, and watch Warne Boulder Ponting in a like with the blinds closed, Steve Waugh umpiring for some reason, like the sheer fucking safety of that. It's gonna be unparalleled.
Yeah,
like more, those guys playing and just with feelings of safety. Just draw those blinds. No one around you. You Uber Eats or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever your choice. You know.
Yeah,
Deliveroo.
Deliveroo. Actually, yeah. Both of them can talk to us if they want. And like, I think that's gonna be really good watching for safety reasons.
Yeah, it's actually worth more than the money that will be donated in the end. But yeah,
I'm just so glad that Warnie's done so much already, hasn't he? Mm.
Yeah,
he's you know, for a bloke who believes that humans evolved from aliens, he's surprisingly
forgotten about that.
Yeah. As opposed to the conventionally accepted, you know, theory of evolution, he's surprisingly on board with climate change, isn't he?
He's pro climate change.
It's good,
and it's also there's nothing more heartwarming. I think the actual winner of the bid of Warnie's baggy green was the Commonwealth Bank.
Yeah,
CBA.
Yeah.
Is there anything more heartwarming than a bank winning?
Well, how good are the banks? Well, I suppose we get on to that in terms of like, so Warne did raise money for, he sold his baggy green just over $1 million. And it was purchased by MC from Sydney. And obviously Twitter's the safest place to go when stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the rumours are going around. So Michael Clark's bought the baggy green. All of a sudden conspiracy theories are abound. Mm-hmm. He's just got his mate to buy his baggy. Yeah, just come over and see it whenever you like, mate. Pay a million for it. But it wasn't. It was a bank.
It was the CEO of CBA.
Yeah.
He was online just, you know, clicking.
Yeah. And I think it's like it's evolved to be simply CBA purchasing it, but you have to put initials in. And we were like, we were just about to do our Seven show, and we just had seen that MC had purchased it, and like the producers coming up to us going like, "Oh, this could be Michael Clark," and we're like, "I think there's a joke in this. I don't actually. Maybe there's not. Maybe if Clark just buys it, it's good. That's it." It was like, "But it's Clark and Warne, and there's a joke, but no, it's probably off. No, maybe." Strange people can do nice things.
The funny thing for me would be if that were the case, which it wasn't, but let's keep going down the rabbit hole of like Warne, obviously, Clark obviously idolized Warne so much. He wore his 23 ODI jersey and said, "I will now buy your baggy green and I'll wear it around the house more than my own problem."
Yeah. Oh, it's just great. Yeah.
It's good.
I've forgotten what the Royal Commission was all about with the banks. It easily makes up for CBA's life
Royal Commission's doing anything.
Good point. All right, Big Bash. Marcus Stoinis hit 147.
Yeah.
Not out last night against the Sixers. He broke a record. 122, Pez, for the previous highest score.
A record. Short. I mean, how long's the Big Bash been going
for? 3 months. This is the ninth.
Okay.
The ninth year. This is BBL 9.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I heard someone say BBL Year 9 the other day, and I just went straight into fucking, you know, corridors and Lynx deodorant under my arms. BBC Year 9.
Why can't they just say the... Okay, whatever. Geez, he batted well. You got to say. He batted incredibly well. It's one of those like lifetime innings. Is 147 in a fucking 2020 game is incredible.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch it. He didn't watch it.
He's like all bat speed. He's like power hitting, everything at hip height.
Yeah.
He's good for Stoinis. He always takes a few balls to get off the mark. He's a bit slow. People are like, you know, he doesn't, what do you call it? Rotate strike. But what about, he had that shot where like he flicked it from outside off stump over mid wicket. And it was just with his wrists. Like there was no, He does a thing like he's got no forearm extension to the way he hits the ball. He's got no he's got wrist levers, not arm levers. Wrist levers.
What can you do in the gym? He goes for wrists, you know how you can kind of do some small weights? Is it small
hand weights?
Yeah, you
can do like an isolation exercise for your forearms and really get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just curious because I might want to play that shot one day.
Yeah.
I might need to work on that.
But he's like, and then I suppose like the enduring image of it was his bat raise for the ton.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that. Yeah, so for those who didn't, like go and have a look at it. But a conventional bat raise, as in the face of the bat being held, his hand behind on the handle, face of the bat. However, the difference was he placed his Melbourne Stars lid on top of the bat in the air.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen that before. And it just made me think like bat raise, like I still think it's more conventional than people holding the fucking blade. I'm still not rating that. Yeah. But bat raises are getting real weird now. It people are having to like evolve what bat raises are. It's like Marge with her, you know, country club dress, and then having to alter it. You know, so it just looks different every time until there's just nothing left.
Well, that's the highest you can get the bat, because if you put something on top of the bat, like in terms of sheer height, you can't get any higher than that.
Good point. Mm. I saw this was a tribute to Chris Gayle apparently, where Chris Gayle did it, where he was holding the blade and he put the lid on top of the handle,
right,
and did that. So I think that's like it's a personification of the object.
Yeah.
So now that the bat becomes a human, the bat has done the work.
An extension of the self.
It's an extension of the self. And Marcus would have been thinking that as well when this, I need to extend the self.
It's still not like, I mean, it's still fairly conservative, like like century celebrations, aren't they? Like
that, more.
You could get real fucking weird.
Let's just think about where you could go with it. Like I still think about when I was procrastinating ahead of my Year 12 exams. I found a Greg Matthews autobiography and he spoke about his debut test and he was approaching 100 against New Zealand at the Gabba, and he was thinking about his dear coach, who like his late coach, who passed away, who meant so much to me, and he started to think about what his 100 celebration would be. And he said, if I score 100 on debut, I'm going to, once I bring up the 100, I'm going to hold a minute silence. And he was out for 91. He said he got distracted thinking about it. And I still think in alternate life, like I would just love to have seen him just stand there.
Can
head
you get
bound.
Timed out during a match?
Timed out during,
timed out for 100.
Not sure, but just imagine that footage. Like that.
What's the weirdest thing you could do? Like just thinking, like could you do it the other way around? Like if you held your back behind your, like you hold your bat behind your back and then extended your arms out like that.
Yeah.
So you're not actually facing the crowd that you're saluting. I'm just trying to think how fucking weird you can get with bat salutes.
I just feel like one of the trickiest moments in a cricket career is when someone has scored 100 and you're batting with them at the time. You don't really know what to do. And like in a test match scenario, you need to give them the spotlight. And so often the person batting with them is kind of like loitering around.
Yeah.
And if Greg Matthews was conducting a minute silence,
you have to give it as well.
Like fucking Dean Jones, the other end, is just like next to him. Just be like,
or you could just go, after 45 seconds, like everyone does in the crowd during a minute silence.
Could you use the non-striker to assist your like batting, like century celebration, somehow like stand on their back or something. You know, like in soccer, like you get on one knee, the goal scorer, and the guy pretends to polish the boots.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could do, like it's obviously got spikes.
Or the person
on
top,
on their back.
Person gets on your shoulders and salutes the crowd, so you've got the unbelievable height.
That's like how high can you get?
Yeah, well,
somebody get on their shoulders like a acrobat, and then hold the helmet
pyramid.
On that.
You could do that. You could do the MCJ AFL mark sort of thing.
Oh yeah, well that would be good.
Jezalenko.
I mean, Andrew Simons, when he's got his 100 the MCJ against England, he like jumped on Andrew. Matthew Hayden, whose lid was then just compressed into his face. It was a horribly scary moment for Matthew.
Yeah, true.
horribly scary. I was terrified, said Matthew.
So, yeah, that's Stoinis.
I can't escape Stoinis, Stoinis's lack of suspension after last week. We sort of spoke about it last week, but yeah, Stoinis was fined $7,500. Pattinson, it's about 2 weeks ago, said, I think, a very similar thing. And was fined matches.
Yeah,
he was left out of a test squad. Stoinis, I don't know. It's look, I say the thing about Stoinis is like,
mate, he hits a clean ball.
It's a clean ball. I say like he's been great to us. He's been very kind, like being our show. He's been funny, but like you kind of got
like
call
how we've
out.
Inserted ourselves in the story.
I'm just saying.
Well, you always have to caveat something before criticizing something.
Unbelievably despicable to like use that language on the field and like. He hasn't been asked to apologise. I mean, you know.
I'm sure he had, like, according to him, or according to reports, he expected to get banned.
Right.
I don't even think that it's probably not even about him anymore. It's about how he gets treated, you know, like, and I think that particular word and its connotations, like, are bad. And apparently he was very distraught about it.
Right.
He probably said it out of a bad habit. Many of us have bad language habits. Like, I'm just surprised that they've been so lenient about it. Maybe they don't want to look like language police, which is probably fair enough. But I just think that word in particular is pretty rough in 2020. Like you see news reports with it, even today, like the word on paper and you just wince.
Yeah.
And
go, oh,
it's not a word that's ever going to look good in print.
Yeah. And, no. But I don't, so it's not, I don't even think it's really about Stoinis anymore. Stoinis expected to get banned, you know, for it, but they've, yeah, just gone strangely like leaning on it. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kane Richardson, an article said, I've never seen him that angry before in regards to that night. So I don't know. Bit going on. Bit going on. Well, it's the Stars are doing unbelievably well.
They've good investigation from us.
Well, I mean,
we're all just shaking our heads and turning away from the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in terms of the Stars, played 9 games, 8 wins.
Yeah.
They're doing incredibly well. The same thing happened last year. Well, it's a very similar thing happened last year. The front runners of the competition, but then absolutely fucked it in the final.
Yeah.
They got Glenn Maxwell in the side. They got Stoinis. Both these guys aren't going to India, which is surprising. Kind of when we speak about the Indian tour in a second, but like, they are the strongest team on paper. The Stars, yes.
Yeah. Well, and they're front runners. Yeah, massively. Although, like, there is this kind of revisionism on Maxwell and Stoinis not going to India. I mean, they were just playing really shit before the India tour was selected. They've played some pretty ordinary short-form cricket. And now, I mean, particularly in the case of Maxwell, who's had a break. He's cited mental health issues. He's had a break, and now we're just seeing like fucking ultimate Glenn Maxwell. And it came after the selection. He even said he shouldn't have been taken. But it was interesting. Like David Hussey, who's the coach, said, you know, that the dressing room is really critical for him at the Stars. It's just a gang of rare units. He feels good there. You can tell he's got the bit between his teeth. He's captain, and you know, in the form he's in at the moment, like that innings he played against the Renegades, unbelievable. And he could bat in the middle order, like in all three formats in this form. You know, he's like, he's obviously in fucking whatever Space Jam beast mode. Like, he's batting bareheaded, like Keith Miller. Yep. He's just unstoppable at the moment. So, it's very good for the Stars that he's there. If they pick the team now, Stoinis and Maxwell would be close to like first picked. But yeah.
But they didn't, and they're not. It was Dale Steyn's time in the Big Bash is over. What are some of the highlights that you take away from Dale Steyn bowling?
My highlights was firstly the announcement that he was coming to play in the BBL.
Yeah, that was good.
And then you telling me now that he's left.
I mean,
didn't he get pumped? I remember when he played his first game. I'm sure he got fucking pumped in his first over in the BBL.
Yeah. He replaced Harris Ralph, who'd taken Pfeiffer and was the leading wicket taker in the BBL.
Yeah.
But Ralph came from like
Tasmania.
Yeah, Tassie Parker. There you go. Yeah.
Come on. Oh, great few weeks in Australia, though, for Steyn.
What about Tom Banton? Tom Banton's time's come and gone. He's leaving now. Yeah. Thoughts?
You would have seen some highlights of Tom Banton. In terms of clean ball hitting, I don't think I've ever seen a cleaner
probably
ball
probably the best trajectory and parabola of a ball that I've ever seen hit is by Tom Banton.
Can't hit him through the offside, though.
Yeah. Weak through the offside.
Really weak.
So, therefore, shit at cricket.
Mm. Except when he hits it left-handed for 6. But apart from that.
But is that the offside?
Oh. That's probably good. That's a good segue into the Renshaw catch. A little bit as well. Speaking of cricket laws, a lot of conjecture over this as well. And you know, as my dad points out, cricket's a game of laws, not rules.
The laws of cricket.
The laws. But like we saw this catch. Yeah. Some point, like the according to the laws of cricket, it was the correct decision. He was out. But like, and so somewhere along the line, like 3 or so years ago, they've clearly decided that like these catches have great virility. You know, when they get caught, but the principle of the law with this with Renshaw. Did you guys see the catch, by the way?
So for the people who are playing overseas, who might not have seen this catch, he takes the catch in the field of play, lobs it up, and he's lobbed it up backwards basically. So he's now over the rope,
And his feet are planted on the ground at that stage,
on the ground, outside the field of play,
and then he jumps in the air, parries the ball.
Yeah.
Whilst in the air, beckons the field of play, then walks onto the field of play and catches it.
A teammate catches it. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. I actually watched it live, saw the catch, and then immediately switched the channel thinking that's not a catch. I didn't even stick with it. I was like, there's no way in the world that that's a catch. And then I saw the resulting furor on social media the next day when I checked my feed, because I don't refresh my feed every 3 seconds. And I was shocked. I was actually shocked.
Shocked.
I'm enjoying that you have just flicked on the Big Bash. You've seen that guy, not a catch, then flicked onto something else.
Yeah. Not a catch.
That is the Big Bash, isn't it?
Yep, straight onto Love on the Spectrum.
Well, like the principle of the law is plainly ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah.
Like an instinctive level, as you were just saying, like most people can see that when, like the fielder should not have any rights over the ball when needing to perform an action outside the field of play.
Why haven't you blinked in 3 minutes?
like the the ball has had sufficient power to require the fielder to be outside the field of play where everyone performs their actions. He must now do things outside the boundary. And they've gone, well, yeah, but if his feet are in the air, then, you know, he's got his rights back.
International
waters. This wouldn't happen if ropes were still, if ropes were non-existent. I still would maintain that the boundary should be the fence. And I don't care what OH&S issues that brings up as a result.
I think leg breaks in the Big Bash could be an interesting new category. Play some R&B music over the tops and fireworks if someone goes off the field. Like that kind of stuff.
I mean, as in people breaking their leg, not just leg spin.
Tiger
O'Reilly.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. More leggy.
I think more leg breaks. It's 1943.
You see, like, the amount of sixes that, like, just go over the rope, for instance. Like, are people going to be able to start just fielding, like, out of the field?
Well, that's what people were saying. Like, you could get really fucking silly. You could take a catch, then run up, you know, to the buy a sausage roll, then run back down.
Your feet being in the air outside the field of play, like, outrank the fact that you need to be there? Like, clearly the ball has propelled itself over the rope. Why does the batter not get the advantage out of that? Like, it feels, nah, but if his feet are in the air, then, you know, that kind of supersedes that. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's international waters, Pez. It's just like, if you can't murder someone, you know, on land, but you can take them on a boat, you have to coax them offshore. Where there is no jurisdiction by law.
I'm persuaded by that, actually. Yes. That's a good decision.
Stop the boats.
Oh, my God. Well, now, we should also talk about Chris Green, friend of the show. He's been cited for chucking. This one came
out of the blue. Our friends of the show getting into trouble.
It's I didn't see this coming. I watched him bowl. I didn't think at any point, fuck, this
boy. Wasn't there, like, a few years ago there was a bit of this talk about his action?
Was there?
I think.
Enlighten us.
Yeah, I remember it. No, I've got no more follow-up on that. Okay. I do remember some rumours circulating.
Yeah, right.
Around it. But then kind of he just, you know, continued on his upwards trajectory in BBL, and then no one really talked to it again. But it seemed to have come out of nowhere, really.
Yeah.
It's a great result for him. I mean, he's got a 9-year contract and he doesn't have to play.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for him.
That's a terrible contract by the...
Right. They obviously didn't see it coming either.
Yeah. Just about going to play? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Most games, every game. Yeah. Every game. Yeah. 9 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing that, like, has annoyed most club cricketers, like, club cricketers just love to know about this stuff ahead of time. You know, like, oh, man, he chucks it. You know what I mean? Oh, why does he wear long sleeves? You know? And they just, like, and then when it comes out, they just feel so smugly, you know, in the know. But I just had never heard anybody, or maybe I'm in the wrong circles, just hadn't heard anyone say, like, gee, Green's a bit suspect.
I'd never heard of it either.
Like, when I saw that there was a Thunder guy in trouble, I was like, oh, that'll be Arjun now. Like, he has been done before.
He chucks it.
It was Green. And also, you know, he's... you know, an Anglo-Saxon Australian, and, you know, we'd never do anything wrong. So
we've never cheated ever.
Yeah.
So
that's good. Or get involved in the chucking stuff. So.
But Dan Christian saw it coming, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, they call him Siri, you see. Knows everything. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe BBL guys have known for ages, but I didn't know shit.
Well, let's get into the real important stuff in this India versus Australia. There's three ODIs coming up. The first one's in Mumbai tomorrow, which is Tuesday. It's being recorded on Monday. In terms of meaningless cricket, how meaningless is this meaningless series?
Well, it's meaningful because it's different from, like, what we've ever experienced before. You know,
it's meaningless.
It's a change. Yes. Like, it's Australian Open time in the tennis. Yeah. And when you're in Australia, like, that has to be matched with, like, colour clothes and sleepy cricket with close finishes that you barely take notice of. And sure, we have that with the Big Bash, but I need a gold team on it. When the Australian opens, I need to flick between channels. I need to see the gold team on, which is Australia. I need to be playing at home in front of a packed crowd. And of course, that's a crowd that I won't contribute to or go to. I need others to go and do that for my televisual pleasure, pleasure that I may or may not engage in. Like, my wife might want to watch an ABC program like Love on the Spectrum or something, which is a lovely program. Yeah, they're very courageous.
That's a good point.
Sometimes it's funny. And so this is change, you know, and it's difficult. Like, there will be cricket on Australia we're playing, but it's not going to be the same.
No. And I read it's the first time in 50 years that we've fucked off overseas this early in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that is serious change for us to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think New Zealand are going to come back here in March for three equally meaningless ODIs.
Yeah.
And
but at least it will be here.
Do you want to know how meaningless it is? Fucking Justin Langer's not going.
Yeah.
The coach of the Australian cricket team just doesn't fancy it. We need a break. I'm not sure what the context of it is. Probably deserves it. Morris and Hawaii stuff. But why is he not going to coach the Australian cricket team? Because it's still the Australian summer and we need to win matches.
Well, he deserves a break. He's handballed it off to Andrew McDonald, who's going to look after the side.
Is this Andrew has a wonderful baritone voice. We might just get him onto the show. Yeah, oh, it's so baritone. It's fucking...
Well, let's not get him on the show.
Yeah, good point,
actually. Baritone.
Yeah.
Well, now that he's amazing. Reached specific profile where you can accept him on the show.
Yeah, good point.
My problem with this is, like, everything that is bad that happens to Australian cricket happens on foreign soil.
Interesting.
And Lang is not going to be there.
Yeah.
What if another sandpaper happens? There's always a possibility on foreign soil.
Yeah.
And they're away from home. They're away from the scrutiny of regulators such as the grade cricketer. What could happen?
Well, we get so wound up overseas because we are famously the villains in every country's eyes, and rightfully so, to be fair. And, you know, when other countries give it back to us, we don't like it, and then we get a bit worked up, and then starts to go a bit wrong.
But the scrutiny is off us. We'll pay less attention, you know.
But these games, they're on at like fucking 2 a.m. Like, the Indian time zone does not work for Australian audiences. So, like, not only is this like meaningless cricket, but like we're just going to wake up to
Sandy.
I need to wake up and watch 3 minutes. Like highlights packages of Ashton Turner hitting 95 off 30 just to feel safe, but that's about all they can do.
But it won't mean anything because nothing means anything overseas unless it happens here.
Yeah, that's true. Apparently Andrew McDonald is like sleeping overnight at the ground to work out what time the dew comes in.
That's great preparation.
That's the sort of shit we need.
Can't he delegate that kind of stuff?
No, but Australian cricket's moving towards this nerd model, you know, with like Labuschagne Smith and now McDonald's camping at the grounds, pitching up his tent just to... Right. Record the time that dew comes in, so it can work out, you know, when to bat first, bowl first, you know, whatever. So, and these are the sorts of changes we need.
Mm. Cool. All right. Hey, other cricket's happening in the world as well. England are playing against South Africa. They drew the series 1-1 with the second test there. But the big takeaway from that was Joss Butler sledging Vernon Philander. Dave, you'd have seen this. You've seen the heavy hitting sledging. Did you see the reaction online? England people loving it. They loved it.
They're fucking getting into it, aren't they?
Yeah. Visceral.
There was so much anger and vitriol in his voice.
Yeah.
In Joss Butler's.
But it was quaver.
Did you believe it?
No, I didn't believe it. It was shaky. And Philander just stood there incredulously and just went, mate, is that seriously the best you've got? And Butler was he was like using his gloves to like emphasize his point. Mate, you fucking lost the battle.
Yeah.
Just the cinematography of it as well was Ben Stokes was behind him.
Yeah.
And you could hear him saying like, stare him down, Joss. Because like Butler like wanted, he said the words and he wanted to look away. And like his eyes, like if you zoomed in, you could see like some watering going on.
If you Joss did Butler, one of those, like you could take 3 screenshots, one progressively closer towards the eye, which is quivering and full of liquid.
Exactly. And just like famously, a lovely man, Joss Butler. There was actually a story about 6 days before about what he actually said to Johnny Bairstow when on the podium. And Joss said to...
Winning the World Cup.
And Joss Butler's tapped Johnny on the shoulder and said, your dad'd be really proud. And it was like this beautiful moment shot by Sky Sports, I presume. And obviously meant a lot to Johnny Bairstow. And that,
still welcome on the show.
Exactly. And that's the kind of guy Joss Butler is. But like when he was trying to take down Vernon Philander, I was like, I'm not believing it.
Yeah. I think he started and he's like, oh, that's just come out of my mouth and I have to stay.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because like, you know, like English cricket Twitter is pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, the king of wit, probably self-appointed in a lot of ways. And a lot of people pointed out, oh, imagine if the Aussies had done this. And I just feel like a lot of those English Twitter guys just for a second got that fucking bloodthirsty taste of what it's like to... you would never admit it publicly, but just that bloodthirsty taste of what it feels like to have players in your team really give it to the opposition. And they liked it.
I feel
like they liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't see many people slapping it down or saying it was poor behaviour. But just to look closely into Butler's eyes, was to see water and redness and fear. Anyway, South Africa lost 3 for 11 after that.
Yeah.
And England
works.
Won. So,
works,
you know,
works.
Sledging works, Brad guys. England, welcome. Sledging works.
And sledging in South Africa works really well.
It does. At least to good things.
Yeah, at least to good things. So be careful, England. Yeah. No, I'd say
you sound a lot like a podcast competitor. saying that.
That's a strong word. To be fair, England have credits in the bank there, whereas I think by the time Australia got to South Africa,
absolutely
not many frank
absolutely.
Credits left there.
So, I'm just saying that I just blank. Think on it, and I want to admit it, but just that visceral level is just like, oh, that feels good.
It's just funny, it just came from
just every so often.
He's so nice.
He is,
and he's probably my
favourite
player.
That's what
player
cricket does to
good,
he's nice
good.
People.
That's what cricket does to
stare
nice
him
people.
Out.
Hey, Josh Phillip is on the show, and also Michael Vaughan is on the show before we get into hashtag AskTGC.
It'll be a fascinating evening when the Australians do bat. Simons. Well fielder.
Oh, you fucking bastard.
Oh, dear, oh dear. That's 2 for 215.
Okay, it's a pleasure to have this young giant join us today. He's got levers. He hits a clean ball. Shane Warne loves him. He's going to the IPL this year. It's Josh Phillippe, and he joins us on The Great Cricketer. G'day, Josh.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Very well, thank you. We sort of kick off the same way, Josh. You made your first class debut when you were sort of 19 or 20. You're no doubt a pathway kid going through all the rep teams. Do pathway kids even play grade cricket anymore? And if so, what's it like and how quickly do you want to get out of there?
Well, I've been playing a little bit of grade cricket this year and I average about 7, so I don't want to play another game.
Why is that? Like, is it just hard to get yourself up for low standard cricket against amateurs?
No, I just keep picking off. I think they've got the better of me.
Well, I suppose the first question we need to ask, Josh, is when are you going to move to New South Wales so you're eligible to play for Australia?
Still got a few more years on my WA contract.
That's a contract issue. It's a contract issue, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Non-committal. Phillippe non-committal on New South Wales contract. Can just see the Fox Sports headlines now. We used to get Fox Sports headlines, actually, and then they stopped writing them when we changed the podcast network. Anyway, enough about us. Just on that, Josh, let's just bypass the grade cricket stuff and get into the major stuff. Like, you obviously base yourself in WA. You're a WA guy, but you've moved to Sydney for the BBL. Can you just tell us how that move came about?
So basically, I was sort of playing a few one day at WA and getting a few rounds, and the Scorchers didn't have any contracts left last year. And I got an offer from the Sixers to keep and open the batting, and it was too good to be true almost. So I took the move last year and loved it, and now really excited to dive to stay on.
Cool. So it's pretty simple. The Scorchers didn't offer you a contract and the Sixers did. Cool. Good question. Good question from me. I mean, I suppose what I'm getting at is, like, can you sort of contrast the, like, attitude of cricket in WA to maybe come over and playing in Sydney? Like, is there a difference in the way both states kind of go about it? Do you enjoy a break from WA cricket? What are the differences?
Yeah, I mean, Big Bash is a completely different setup, I guess. It's a very relaxed environment. So, I guess, Shield cricket and one-day cricket, it's a bit more serious. You know, we train a bit more. There's a few more things, sort of obligations you got to do. Over here, it just seems, super relaxed, really. And I love that environment and I feel like I thrive in it as well.
You obviously have, like, good friends playing for the Scorchers, and, like, some of the conversation around those guys has been the travel they have to put up with. And while people say, like, oh, going to Perth, it's a long way, sort of forgetting that the Scorchers have to travel for every other game on the Eastern Seaboard. Like, do you find that to be a big disadvantage for the Scorchers guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they have to play with only one day in between games and they get a 4.5-hour flight, I think that's a massive disadvantage. I guess it's a little bit different when it's only a 3-hour game and it's often at night, but it's not ideal when you're pretty much wasting your day off travelling.
Mm. So you'd obviously welcome an Auckland-based team as well.
Absolutely.
Mate, can you just tell us about the Sixers setup? Obviously, a few good characters in there as well. Like, you're a young buck. You're about to go to the IPL. I'm sure you, earn a lot of attention from some of the elder Sixers players. Like, whose wing are you under in the Sixers? Like, who's guiding you around? I'm primarily talking about off the field.
I probably spend a little bit too much time with Soppy, which is very dangerous. I probably should be careful, but I do get on with Soccer quite well, and a few of the other lads like Husey, Moses as well. They all like to go have a beer every now and then, so I often like to join in.
Could you, like, compare the Sydney circuit to the Perth circuit? I suppose, like, just in terms of the character and the colours and the conversations.
Well, Marcus Harris was very complimentary of the Perth circuit during the Test match, but Sydney might be better if it was open.
A little bit different, I guess. I feel like Perth, there's a really good Sunday session at the OBH in Perth, but I guess in Sydney, I do love the Coogee Pavilion. I think that's one of the greatest venues on earth.
So much reverence.
Yeah.
It's 500 metres from my apartment as well, which helps. So.
London, New York, Paris, Tokyo, Kujipav.
So, absolutely.
Some of the greats. I want to ask you, like, how you sort of feel about the attention. Sort of the very first game of the Sixers this year, scored some runs. Right at the top of the bat, all of a sudden, this guy needs to play 100 tests for Australia. You know, are you sort of aware of, like, the sort of fanfare about you in the Big Bash? And so how do you cope with that?
It's obviously still pretty new to me. Being quite young, but it's amazing how one game, you know, you do well in one game and all of a sudden you should be test captain of Australia.
And you should.
I've had one good T20 game and I think I should be the next, you know, test keeper batter. they kind of draw comparisons from absolutely anything and then you miss out twice and all of a sudden you should be playing Q grade. So, you just got to... You can't read too much into it. I mean, you know, the public sort of say what they got to say, and we just got to, I guess, not read into it.
Yeah. I didn't see where the lie is in either of those things. You know what I mean? Succeed, test captain, fail, third grade. Yeah. It's a roller coaster, but you know that's cricket.
I'm about to be dropped from my club side anyway.
I actually hadn't heard that you were going to replace Tim Payne, but I think you put that out there as well. That's good. Mm. That's good from you.
is that serious? Are you on the brink at your club side at the moment?
I don't think so. I think they're going to stick with me for a bit longer.
Averaging seven.
You need a clean ball, though. Sorry about this.
My keeping's hanging on first, go, put it that way. Continuing to give me a game.
Look over the gloves. I need a keeper. Yeah.
I mean, you know, on that note, like you're in the top 10 run scorers of the BBL. It still is a good season for you this year, and there's still finals to come. You could do some damage. Like, just on the question of the next level, more about your attitude towards it. You're obviously keeping very relaxed, but you know, like, how impatient are you to get to the next level? Oh, there's a T20 World Cup coming up next year. Like, is that a goal for you? Is that something that's, you know, important for you in the near future?
I guess if I keep doing well, I definitely think it's a goal, but I don't think it's a be all and end all. I mean, I'll be 23 when the World Cup comes around next year, so I guess I've still got plenty of time on my side, and you know, it all sort of happens at its own pace. So, you know, I don't really want to rush it, but if I continue to do well and get picked, I mean, that would be an amazing achievement. But I guess just keep trying to do what I do well and see what happens.
You're obviously facing international standard bowlers quite often in the Big Bash and sometimes third graders, it should be said. But, I mean, Rashid Khan had a bumper season last year and he's going great this year as well. He took a hat-trick the other day. A couple of days ago, you hit 83 off 50-something balls, took him down. I mean, like people, I remember Shane Warne saying that he's harder to pick under lights. Do you find that some spinners and some bowlers are harder to pick at different times of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, for whatever reason, it just seems quite hard to see the seam, especially at night on the ball. So it's quite hard to see which way sort of the revolutions are going.
And right.
Especially someone like Rashid Khan bowls a lot of cross seamers as well. So, you know, I can't pick him. I've got no idea. So,
but you hit 83 or 50 against him.
Yeah. Well, if you could pick him.
But the best advice I had to play him was play him like a medium pacer because he bowled so fast. So, I was just moving outside the line of my stump. So, basically, if he hit me on the pad, it was hopefully hitting outside off stump. And, you know, if he bowled me around my legs, so, you know, that, I was just going to accept that. So, then I just try to sweep everything. that was the plan.
As we go to air, it's the night after Marcus Stoinis has hit 147 not out. You were keeping in that game, so you know, to use a cliche, you've had a pretty good view. Like everyone else, did you feel like it was a bit selfish of him to stay in that inning so we couldn't watch Maxwell? Or
absolutely, that would have made 250 if I'm actually going to hit. he was incredible last night. It just seemed everything just went his way. I don't think he missed the middle of his bat all night. And, you know, it was an absolutely incredible innings and pretty cool to sort of be out there for it because I'm not sure we're going to see anything as good as that from Bowler.
When you were walking off the field last night, who did someone say, "Oh, I reckon they're 30 short here"?
Yeah.
We can get someone say what? Sorry.
Yeah.
I think someone needed to make 140 for us to get it. But it wasn't a nice wicket. So, if we had a few more wickets in hand, you just never know. But we needed to be sort of up with the run rate the whole way through. And it's really tough and lose a couple and then have to rebuild. You're always sort of behind the game, so tough, very tough chasing 220.
I love how you're squirming, knowing that as you're walking off the field, this is going to be hard, but I can't say that.
Yeah.
Let's all just tell each other that we might be able to do it.
Yeah. Someone's got to stand up here.
You've got to have some confidence somewhere, don't
you? Of course. On that note, your confidence must be through the roof after getting picked up in the IPL this year as well. It's the mecca for T20 players, Royal Challengers Bangalore. When you talk to people about this kind of stuff, especially if you get picked up toward the end of the auction, they sort of just talk about just being a squad player and maybe getting a game or two. Like, what's your attitude going into it? You just eyes wide open, looking forward to it. What are your aims there?
It'll be really cool to potentially get a few games, but I'm obviously aware that they're only about four overseas, and some of the overseas are like AB de Villiers, Dale Steyn, Chris Morris, Aaron Finch, Payne Richardson. So, it's not the be-all and end-all. If I don't get it down, I think it'll just be really cool to be over there and be a part of the setup and see how it works over there.
Mate, I can just hear you getting called to board your flight, so we might let you go. But we appreciate your time, wishing you all the best for the rest of the competition, and remember us when you're playing your 100th test and captain.
Or playing second grade.
Yeah, either way.
Cheers, guys.
No worries.
It's a lot more secure in behind, sort of pushing forward.
Weathered a storm all afternoon.
He's wiped the cross one.
Funny place, Australia, at the moment.
Sometimes.
Bit going on, as we like to say. TGC.
Yep.
Some things not so good, like holidaying away from Australia when you should probably be here. Mm-hmm. Or
probably.
Just young liberals, generally. But there's some good things about Australia as well. Australian-owned, Australian-made businesses. Budgie smuggler. Very, very tenuous link this time, but it's a competition now.
Jobs and growth.
Mm.
Plenty of jobs and growth.
I thought you said chops and growth just then.
Chops and growth.
Chops and growth.
Which is a new
That's what they're taking
fragrance.
To the next election. That's a the new coalition. Take that one to the next
well,
election.
Well, that could be anything.
Mm.
Chops and growth.
Chops and growth is a new fake out.
If someone's bringing chops and growth, that's something I can get behind.
Should be the other way around.
That's actually the tagline for budgie smuggler.
Is it? Should be.
For certain. For blokes of a certain.
Ilk,
yeah.
I'm scrolling through Budgie's website at the moment, just looking at like the various products here. It's
chops
actually,
and growth.
It's actually, yeah. I'm
it's
on a
just, web, usually the other way around.
I'm on a website looking at chops and growth, and this like some of these are so, and these aren't even like the custom ones that you can get done on budgiesmuggler.com. There's like I'm just looking. There's Winx smugglers.
Mm. Winxy yeah. girl.
Exactly. Mm. Aboriginal flag. You got Adam Ashley Hoopers.
Oh, that's nice.
Some wallaby stuff.
Is that Adam Ashley Cooper and Michael Hooper combined?
They're just the Australian green and gold, just sort of horizontal stripes.
Right, got it.
It's what your wild flowers.
I went to a face swap between both of them.
A face swap?
Mm.
Whatever happened to the face swap? Kind of died out, didn't it?
The Russians got what they wanted.
That's right. He's in power, isn't he? Yeah. Morrison or Trump? Who are we talking about?
We're talking about deep fakes, aren't we?
We're talking about something. Watermelons. I hate coriander. What's the deal with the hate for coriander? I feel like it's the most inoffensive.
It's called arugula
garnish
in the US, I think.
What is it?
Arugula.
Arugula.
Is that right?
Yeah, coriander is called arugula.
It's called something different in the US.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which really threw me when I went to the US and tried to get some coriander for my salsa.
Yeah. But don't you think it's so inoffensive? It's like people who don't like capsicum. So you barely. It's water.
It triggers some people though.
It does.
It's
yeah.
A real trigger.
It's a color.
Yeah.
I'm a big coriander guy.
Are you?
Said that.
Can
yeah.
you be big on it?
I'd say it's a figure it's a figure of speech for liking things, yeah. Okay. And I like capsicum. I wasn't aware that capsicum had an issue.
Big time.
And how does this relate to budgiesmuggler.com.au?
Well, it's a colourful, colourful product. Mm. A colourful product's on budgiesmuggler.com.
That's used in water.
Dave was saying it's not called coriander in the States, but in the UK, it's also called budgiesmuggler.com. So
it's a global brand.
That's right.
For global people.
That's right.
And just for the clarification of the detail-oriented out there, we continually refer to the website as .com and then sometimes as .au. But if you type in budgiesmuggler.com, it actually defers to .com.au.
If you can't use the internet at this stage,
it's one of the great things about budgiesmuggler. You can do whatever you want.
Mm. If you can't use the internet, fuck off.
I can't find budgiesmuggler.
We're probably
on the
not listening to this cast, yeah.
I like the I like the questions we get about how do I find the podcast.
Yeah,
you could have found it in the time that you took the time to send the message.
We
to
don't
us.
Want you as a listener. Yeah. If you're writing to us asking where to find it, we don't want you.
Mm.
Please leave.
Yeah,
that's budgiesmuggler.com. Don't are you?
The captain.
Hashtag RCDC.
Oh, nice.
Wonderful chats that we had. I might as well just say it now.
Please.
Either Michael Vaughan's on the show or he's not.
Mm.
And we're waiting for confirmation.
He has seen our latest DM.
Seen it.
Blue ticks all around.
So,
what's your guess at this stage, you know?
I feel confident.
You feel confident he's going to come through?
Yep. Yeah. Tim Bresnan is wrong.
Yeah.
And I feel confident.
Yeah. We've been warned that like Vaughan may or may not partake in these things, which is probably, you know, he's given us more time than the other opposing captain in the 05 Ashes. So,
true.
You know?
True. Yeah. And everything is sent to that prism.
I'm guessing, and you know, this is just going on the line, I'm guessing there'll be a text that comes through after the show is finished and we've all departed.
Mm. This is the rock and roll life of the podcaster on the fly, you know?
Yeah. You make it to the absolute top of the niche cricket satirical podcast game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then every week it's a fucking gamble. Will they come on or won't they?
I was surprised that iTunes added that category to the store.
Yes.
And we're coming third.
It's that time of year where the end of season awards are starting to come around. All of your hopes and dreams have already failed. But why not get us, the great cricketers, along to your end of season awards night? It's a greatcricketer.club and we can speak mockingly to your faces. You can take us anywhere, all around the country. We've already been all around the country. You're already pissed, haven't we?
Yeah. This happened last year, and we're very grateful when people would like our services to celebrate their year. But what happens is, like, every club around Australia holds its end of season presentation in the same 2-week period, so it genuinely does book up. So, you know, if you do want to get in touch, then, you know, do it.
GreatCricketer.club is the place to contact us, as you also get the merchandise there, blah, blah, blah. You know the deal. You know how the internet works, unless you don't, in which case, as Dave Riley says, fuck off.
Jesus Christ.
It's too late to edit that out as well.
Bit aggressive.
Too late.
Bit aggressive. All right, John Smith writes in. Says, g'day, lads. I have a query for you. I'm going into the last year of my degree, and I'm thinking about potential career paths. As someone of a left-leaning persuasion, I've drawn to jobs where I might be able to help people and better the world around me. I haven't played cricket since under 14s, so I avoided becoming jaded and cynical. My issue is a humanitarian career doesn't pay nearly enough to afford a yearly SCG membership. The Sydney Test is the highlight of the year, and I've been attending the members since I was 7. While I pretend to be working class, the thought of watching cricket surrounded by sweaty Australian alpha males and singlets scares the shit out of me. What should I do? Should I pursue a satisfying and rewarding career? Or should I become a corporate drone for a big four consulting firm, signing my life away, but still being able to watch Steve Smith's have a net from about 5 metres distance? I could try and get safe Labour pre-selection, but would I then have to follow through on my working class charade and throw away the linen shirts and RM Williams? Would appreciate any advice, Angus. P.S. Since my dad started listening to this podcast, he's been calling me champ about 5 times a day. Cheers, cucks.
It's a very pertinent question. John Smith who sent that in, then signed off Angus. And then the person who sent it in has neither of those names.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very pertinent question, and I think we've all got a little bit of experience with it. I mean, I think the middle ground answer is champagne socialism.
Yeah.
You know, socialist in public, champagne capitalism behind closed doors.
Okay. Okay.
Get your multiple properties. Go work for a little bit in a big four so you've got a little bit of that cred. But never – don't dive in too much.
No.
Do it. Always show that you've got a little bit of socialist about you.
Spess hasn't blinked in so long. You haven't blinked in so long.
He's actually left the room and pressed the recording.
Speak in private about your like enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders, but in public remain diplomatic. But go on holidays to wealthy places, but do so, do so gracefully and kind of quietly. Sit in the middle, basically, and don't stand for anything until you die.
I agree. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not ready for the workforce. Proper, is he? I mean, what he does need to do, in line with what you're kind of saying there, is take a year off and do some volunteer work and, you know, a third world country with some impoverished children to make him feel better about himself, and then come back and work for a McKinsey or some other kind of big consulting firm and then get that SCG membership that you so desperately crave.
Yeah.
Isn't that exactly what you did? Your life story.
And secondly, he's exactly what's wrong with modern Labour. You know, the Green Left faction, which is out of touch with working class Australia, which is what the Labor Party originally stood for. So,
I would say, like, in our experience of going around the grounds, the people who are having the most fun days are the people who are in the concourse, who are wearing just fun, ridiculous paraphernalia.
Yeah.
They're having the best days.
They're wearing fucking Bunnings straw hats.
Yep.
They're wearing AC/DC singlets. They're wearing thongs. There's a lot of fluoro, there's a lot of colour, and there's a lot of vibrancy.
Mm. Yes.
And then you go into the members, and it's full of fucking big four drones.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, just it's the same. Sizing the same each other clothes. Up, making the same handshake, checking each other's stock portfolios.
Mm. Yeah.
Speaking in the same tenor, literally, you go in and it's just the same noise. It's actually quite
measuring
nicely.
Each other's blue chip managed funds against each other.
Yeah.
And measuring
it's a good point. Both
on those
are good.
Funds.
Yeah,
the thing
are good.
For John, though, is that, like, obviously there's a bit of an existential catastrophe taking place. Like, I would say a mass experience on both sides of the capitalist and socialist divide, so that you can point towards experience on both sides there. And then, depending on whatever policies are taken in relation to the climate and stuff, pivot accordingly. I mean, if we all just need to run for our lives and sort ourselves out, go capitalist, go big. And if you need to help with the collectivist cause because we're going to try and make a fist of it, then you'll have got some runs on the board there. And, you know, the socialist movement will take the capitalist kind of, what's the word? Like turncoat if the planet's dying. So I just say a mass experience on both sides. I think it's a wonderful like level of awareness for someone just out of their degree, you know.
He probably wrote that in the members on day two.
The level of education.
Someone told him that the only way members. To get SCG membership is to join the financial services industry in Sydney.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the question. Question from Elisa Healy at Grade Cricketer. I need some advice. Got my first game of grade cricket this year, tomorrow. This is written on Saturday. Which representative helmet will make me look less like a flog? And I love this question.
Well, there's layers, isn't there?
I love this question.
Which one?
Yeah.
So I'm going to wear a representative lid.
Exactly.
I'm going to wear which one? Puts me in the best standing with teammates.
I love the immediate exclusion of the notion of wearing a grade lid.
Exactly.
Like I'm definitely wearing a rep lid.
Yeah.
Now you guys work out.
I've only got rep lids.
Yeah.
Not going to buy another one.
Exactly.
I'm not fucking off to Rebel.
Yeah.
No.
And getting a Tiger's lid. Mm. Who should play for?
Balmain. Or Sydney Cricket Club now. But we got this question on Saturday, and immediately and intelligently threw this out to the fans. And wrote to Elisa and said, would you mind, if we asked? She said, no, go for it. And I said, look forward to getting a bunch of responses from blokes seeking validation immediately. And she said, it's all that happens to me.
Yeah,
I'm very used to it.
Yeah.
And we put a poll out there of asking what lid should Elisa wear. And the options were the Australia lid, New South Wales lid, Sixers lid, or any rep lid just with tape over it. And 3,500 votes in a day. And it was convincingly came in that she should wear a rep lid with tape over the top. It was over 50%. Needless to say, and the least voted for was New South Wales with 6%, I believe, and Elisa the following day wore a New South Wales lid, going to show that she, actually didn't give a shit, and nor should she.
But she checked Twitter once a day and just couldn't be fuck going and to see the outcome of that poll.
I noticed someone said, wear your New South Wales lid just to remind people that it's close enough, but you don't have one yourself.
Further
and
away
I think
than
that was the one
be.
That I don't think she gave it a like, but clearly she did.
Yeah, I think someone suggested the Barker first 11 helmet as well.
Right, okay.
That was nice.
Yeah. Which would have been nice.
That's funny.
Nice touch.
I feel like, yeah, the New South Wales lid is like, it's shows that like I'm still down to earth. You know, I am above all of you.
Grassroots cricket.
But also, like, I just couldn't fathom having an Australian lid and not wearing that every single day of my life.
Yeah.
And any opportunity.
Just, wherever, to the toilet and stuff like that.
Wherever you like.
Yeah.
Wherever you like.
Shower.
Showers, definitely.
Bed.
If you had 100%. To one, if you had to wear one driving. Piece of, you know, Australian kit for the rest of your life every day, what would it be?
One piece of Australian,
Australian kit.
I reckon you could get away the most with a sweater.
Yeah, okay.
Get away with
it. It'd be fucking hot, though. Think about how hot it is now.
Well, I was like a few weeks ago. I was down on the peninsula in Melbourne, and I just saw someone pull up next to me, and I just saw some like Cricket Australia paraphernalia, and I looked again, and it was Ricky Ponting getting out of his car. Left him alone. He just went to a bakery, minding his own business. But I did find it funny that Ricky Ponting was wearing. Have I said this on the cast before? I just find it funny that Ricky Ponting was wearing Cricket Australia issued kit.
Mark War was, wasn't he feeding his donkey while wearing New South Wales rep shorts or actual shorts?
Emerging Blues
1983.
Yeah. I saw Gavin Robinson at the Oaks about maybe a year ago, and he's wearing a light ice New South Wales training jacket.
Nice.
From
the 90s. That was the ultimate piece of kit for kids our age.
Mate, there would be some snuffs on eBay who would pay top dollar for that shit. Some real fucking snuffs.
This is a spin-off cast, just stories of people wearing rep kit.
Yeah, people we've seen.
Send them in. Send him in and pictures.
Highest profile player wearing the most niche representative kit.
We saw Joffre Archer daggering in the Caribbean on a woman wearing his England shorts. It's fucking incredible.
Okay.
Daggering on
God. This one just comes from someone called Coach. Greetings, TGC.
Darren Lehman.
Oh, it's Darren Lehman.
Coach.
Name of his book.
Greetings, TGC, and many thanks for the podcasts which have helped me brave the UK off-season. Nice. I'm an Aussie coaching in the UK. I was keen to clarify issues pertaining to chops.
Right.
I was recently undertaking yet another pre-season drinking session, brackets, piss fitness, most important strategic element leading into this year's campaign, close brackets, when one of the lads indicated he would need to duck out for a chop, in brackets, his wife was ovulating. Although disappointed with the lad's commitment to the club bonding session, it got me wondering whether an obligatory marital coital can be considered a chop and therefore part of a Chop King CV. I hastened to add he was back with the team inside 30 minutes and he lives 7 minutes walk from the hotel. P.S. The sledging story about Steve Waugh and a second grade fixture at North Sydney is true. I may have been involved in that game in an official but off-field capacity. Cheers, Coach.
I reckon it counts.
We get a lot of people asking for clarification on the chop rules.
Mm. I think it counts. I don't think you can take the chops away from a married man. Because then what else do they have to
live
for?
I've always maintained that the chop should be with a otherwise unknown person, a stranger, and that intensifies the rarity and exclusivity of the chop itself.
But if a married man scores 100, he or she, so I should say.
I'm advocating cheating.
Yeah.
Is what I'm doing.
Oh, I see.
Advocating.
But if, like, a married man like scores, or married person scores 100, he or she should be permitted to engage and deliver and execute triple C.
I agree.
There can be one caveat.
Not that any married people play cricket anymore.
Well, if the teammate managed to impregnate his wife during this chop, then that changes.
Well, what about that?
That changes everything. If he can produce proof of the
effect.
That's a quadruple C. If he can come to the lads and go, here's the due date, we work backwards, do the maths, figure out that he actually chopped. When was this during
Century Circuit chop conceive.
Nice.
That's a quadruple C. Yeah. We've done
conceive.
It.
Conceive.
Yeah.
That's
fucking
really good.
Yeah.
Has anyone done a triple C out there and conceived?
Yeah,
that's or triple the next. C. Let us know. Nice.
Well, I just want to pick up one thing from Coach here, kind of like half sledging this guy who went out for a marital coital, and like it took him 30 minutes and it was a 7 minute walk from a hotel. Mm-hmm. Obviously, hasn't tried to conceive before.
No,
you know that's it's a complete numbers game, and he should be praised for it. If anything, I don't think that should really be. I think it should be stricken from the record. Really,
okay. All right, last one comes in from Matt Taylor. Once again, another deep dive into...
Oh, cool. Looking forward to this short story.
Fake name.
No, this one's all right, read it before. Hi, fellas. Just thought I would share a tubbing story with you all. The team I play for in the UK were fortunate to play a final at Lords last season. Before I got to the tubbing, I thought I should quickly add that even though we were playing at Lords, the pinnacle of any player's cricketing career, the rain came down, whilst we were fielding in the second innings and we came off. We sat in the away changing room at Lord's during the rain break, but the consensus was still the same. We did not want to go back out to play because we still hated cricket. Also helped, we were ahead on Duckworth Lewis and there were four crates of Bud on ice, ready and waiting. We reluctantly went back to the hollowed turf and ended up winning convincingly. We were now hours away from the circuit of a lifetime. The team gathered in the changing room, sang the team song and started seeing away beers at a tumultuous pace. Suddenly, out of the blue, a former player came running into the change room with just a towel around his waist, holding a bucket in which it contained four bottles of Veuve Clicquot. He began chanting, "Showers, showers, showers." The former player was pretty cooked from the many beers he had consumed during the day's play, so we were, of course, highly sceptical of venturing into the showers with him. Also, said player had a long-lasting reputation at the club for being an absolute menace when it came to tubbing time. Tate's got his head in his hands. 30 minutes passed and the former player was still silently and patiently waiting in the corner of the away changing room in Lord's, waiting for the first of the team members to take off their kit and venture into the prestigious Lord's showers. Suddenly, we hear a whimper from him. "I can't believe no one has showered yet."
Whimpering.
It was clear that the former player was not going to leave the premises until we had showered. He had showered with the boys at the home of cricket. Myself and two others foolishly decided to alpha up and go first. The former player followed us to the showers like a lion stalking its prey. With a bottle of champagne in one hand and phone in the other, he entered the communal shower area. What we didn't realise was the former player was sharing this whole experience on his phone through the platform of Facebook Live for thousands of people to see. This was unbeknown to us three as we continued to sing and chant completely nude. More players began to gather into the shower area, and some would say it was quite a rowdy half an hour of chanting, drinking, and other activities that cannot be spoken of. My questions are, should we care that our manhoods are now published on the internet forever and can be seen by any person at any time? Should we just accept that the former player was trying to instill a strict tubbing culture for the generations to come? And finally, after hearing this story, do you promote the most alpha of former players returning to the dressing rooms after a big win to shower with the boys? Finally, as you could imagine, it was a cracking circuit. Thanks, lads. Hope you enjoy. Matt.
Nice. Good story. Well written. It was quite a romp. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very Stephen King. It was a horror yeah. story for a while, and yeah. it was like an episode of Black Mirror. You know what I mean? what if your showers were just all over God. Facebook Live? But yeah. I still have it's like an anti-hero, this alpha guy who's come in, because he's obviously recognized, like, some people just really love showers, you know. We've spoken to Bob Quiney. He's right. a former player who goes in. It's obviously something that happens. Mm-hmm. We're sharing, sort of helping, like, you know, provide a vehicle for people to understand this dysfunctional kind of connection many men have with showers. But this sounds like one of the best shower stories I've ever heard in my yeah. life, given the venue, given
and you're
the
fucking Lords.
Yeah, yeah, the Veuve Clicquot. Yeah.
Are the Lords showers particularly prestigious, the showers themselves? Or did he, like, can only imagine the Facebook live stream, like, from walking from, you know, the box or the field through the corridors, the hallowed corridors of Lords yeah. into the bathroom?
I haven't heard anyone ever say, like, Lords, great ground, like, terrible tubs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm presumed that they're yeah. good.
I've yeah. also never heard anyone yeah. say that. Yeah. I just feel like anything with Lords.
I wonder if the Lord's showers has a slope.
Just out well towards just out
trickles
towards the
down
to the yeah. drain. Must yeah. have a small slope. Yeah. McGrath was good there. Fuck, he was good there.
It's good. It's 8 degrees or something.
Yeah, I just feel like with Lords, it's just everything about it, like, oh, great tea there. Oh, the dressing rooms yeah. are so good there. The
you're just court. Swept up with being at Lords. Is it objectively good tea? Is everything objectively good
about
Lords?
Because you know how, Lords? Like, every ground has an honours board, but Lords is the only one that gets spoken about because yeah. it's a Lords honours board. Mm. Lords grounds, best slope.
Lord is a great word. It's got yeah, a connotation true. Of literally Jesus Christ. Yes. I know, it's just the Lord, but, like, it's yeah. just the ground of the Lord.
The oval yeah. is pretty
the,
good as well.
Yeah, both of them
the
are trying oval. To out each other. Like, yeah. they're yeah. of well, all
Lord's
ovals,
one,
this is the...
I'm the fucking oval.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's two grounds talking to each other.
I'm Trent Bridge.
Yeah. Mr. Bridge.
Oh, there's a bloke out there called that, probably.
Well, once again, we've not answered any of those questions.
It's a good story, though.
Good story.
Yeah.
Good story. I'm worthy. Thank you so much to Ryan Philippe
yeah.
and also his brother Josh. And Michael Vaughan, is he on it? Well, we'll find out.
There's no text not yet.
Sure. No text yet. Still waiting.
Scene, though. Big old scene.
All right. I'll see you guys next week.
Okay. Bye.